I couldn't hear it. Is it soft?
Yes.
I could hardly hear it. Huh?
Make it
soft.
Softer.
Yeah? Okay. So, to whom am I speaking?
Russian-speaking devotees.
К сожалению, я не могу говорить по-русски. Чуть-чуть. Но трудно говорить. Я понимаю. Иногда. Okay. Oops, I forgot to turn this off. Well, for those who don't know me, my name is Naranjana Swami. He was saving Vishnu Kumar. Difficulties in giving the introduction. And I'm a little bit familiar with those of you who previously lived in the former Soviet Union, because I've been going there for 30 years, and I started going about 30 years ago. I visited Moscow, Leningrad, Kiev, Almaty then, Novosibirsk, and a few other cities. And it was an adventure that I didn't realize was going to lead me into something that protracted as it was for so many years. I thought I was just going to make one visit. And I was going on a tour. I'm sure you all know well about what the tour was. The camera around my neck and making it look like I was interested. And then I would have to go with a group of tourists from America. We would land in Moscow, first stop, and then I would have to go out on the tours with the tourists and then break away at night and meet devotees. And that's how I started going there. Many of the devotees I've known for that long, since 30 years ago. And because of that, I've been spending less time in America, although I was here. Prior to that, I had been living in the Boston area and traveling in the Northeast and in Canada. But since that time, I've been spending most of my time in the countries of the former Soviet Union. But once in a while I visit America, and here I am visiting Chicago. And come to speak to you this evening. I was going to read a little something and maybe speak a little bit. It's a topic. Any of you were there last night at the temple?
Yeah.
Yes? No?
Yes,
you would. Okay. There was a question at the end. It was in relationship to how is a devotee friendly towards all living entities. And the person who was asking the question was asking for clarification. What does it mean to be friendly towards all living entities? It's not such an easy thing to do. Of course, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the 5th chapter, that he is Moktaram Jagatapa Samsava Lokamaheshwaram Suhridam Sava Bhutanam Yatvamam Shantam Mishyati. He says that he's Suridam Sarvabhutanam. He's friendly towards all living entities. He can be friendly towards all living entities, and as we were speaking about last night, because Krishna is everyone's well-wisher, and Krishna doesn't need anything from anyone's. And because he doesn't need anything from anyone, although he doesn't need anything, he says that if somebody offers me something with love, I'm very eager to accept it. Patam pushpam palam doyam yame bhakti parayachati. He says, if a devotee offers me a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water with love, I will accept it. Now, of course, if we have a little understanding of Krishna, who is Krishna, and Krishna says he's Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. He's the Supreme Lord of all sacrifices and austerities, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. He's the Supreme Lord of all the planets and the demigods. So, Krishna, being the Lord of everything, the origin of everything, both material and spiritual, and not only he is the Lord, he is the creator, the maintainer, and the enjoyer, and proprietor. Therefore, why would he need a fruit, us to offer him a fruit, or a flower, or water? Obviously, he doesn't need the offering because it's already his. And because it's already his, when a devotee or anyone offers it with love, it's not the leaf that attracts it. It's not the flower, it's not the fruit, but what attracts him is the love, the intent, the purpose, the motive. Krishna is very much attracted by love, and in many places he explains how he is attracted by love and how anything else cannot attract him. What attracts him is when a person actually has love for him. There is a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and I'll get to the verse that I was going to speak to, but I'm going to introduce it a little bit. It's a story from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a story of Maharaj Ambarish, who had love for Krishna. He was a great devotee of Krishna. And the characteristic of Maharaj Ambarish is that although he was a king, he was always absorbed in service to the Lord. And therefore, he was engaging all of his senses fully, exclusively in Krishna's service. His eyes he would use for beholding the beautiful form of the deity. His hands he would use for cleansing the temple of the Lord. His legs he would use, and his feet he would use for walking to the temple of the Lord. His ears he would use for hearing the glories of the Lord. His nose he would use for smelling the tulsi, which has been offered to Krishna. In this way, he was described as the great devotee because all his mind and his senses were fully engaged in Krishna's service. And Srila Rupa Goswami, he says in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Iha Yasya Hareya Dasya Kamana Manasagara, that for a person who's always absorbed in his mind, his body, and his words in the service of Krishna, he is already a liberated soul, even though he's still within the body. So Maharaj Ambarish was such a personality. And he was performing a fast, and as we know the story, for those of you who have heard it before, I'll just briefly summarize it. He had to break his fast at a certain time, and he had been fasting continuously for a long time. And when the time, appropriate time to break the fast came, he happened to be visited by one Nirvasa Muni, who is a great sage. Nirvasa Muni was accompanied with his followers. And Nirvasa Muni came to the palace of Maharaj Ambarish, and he wanted to take first a bath and then he would come and be received by the king. But when he went to take his bath, it was exactly the time he was supposed to break his fast. So he consulted with the learned Brahmanas and said, "What should I do? It's not appropriate for a host to eat before his guest. But at the same time, if I don't break my fast at this time, then my fasting will be rendered null and void. So can please advise me?" And the Brahmanas advised him that if you drink a little water, then it will be considered both fasting and not fasting. Even sometimes when we perform an Ekadasi Vrata, when we're fasting on Ekadasi, we may still take water and it's considered not breaking fast, unless it's a Nirjal Ekadasi. But so he took a little water, and then when Durvasa Muni returned from taking his bath, he couldn't immediately, because he was an ascetic, mystic, and he immediately knew that Maharaj Ambarish had taken some water. And he became very disturbed. "How is it possible? What kind of a king are you? You're dressed as a saintly king, but actually you're a pretender. You have not properly received your guest. You've eaten before him." And he became so angry that he wanted to punish him, and he invoked the presence of a very fiery demon by mantra to punish Maharaj Ambarish for his offense. Now, the Lord, who states in Bhagavad Gita, "Kanteha pratik janihi nami bhakti pranashati," Krishna says that my devotee is always protected. I will always give protection to those who are fully surrendered to me. So, to protect Maharaj Ambarish, even though this demon was about to attack him, the Lord invoked his Sudarshan Chakra to go and to destroy the demon. And the Sudarshan Chakra, after destroying the demon, began chasing after Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni could understand the potency behind the Sudarshan Chakra. He knew it was something that should be avoided at all costs. And therefore, Nirvasa Muni, in an effort to protect himself, he began running in fear, trying to avoid him. And because he was a mystic yogi, he had the capacity to travel in places where ordinarily others could not travel. And he went and he approached Lord Brahma in his heavenly abode and for protection. And when he approached Lord Brahma and said, "Please, you are the creator of the universe, certainly you can offer protection to me." And Lord Brahma said, "No, sorry, I cannot. This chakra was invoked by Lord Vishnu, and certainly I don't have the capacity to do anything to retract it." He went to Maheshdam, he went to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva had a similar response. "I'm sorry, I cannot do anything. It's not within my power." So then he decided, because he had the capacity even to travel to the spiritual Vaikuntha planets, he went to Lord Vishnu. And when he went to Lord Vishnu said, "Sorry, I don't have the capacity to help you either." And this was something that was very difficult for Durvasa Muni to understand. "How is it that you don't have the capacity to help me? Because you invoked the Sudarshan Chakra, certainly you can retract it, I've been told." And the Lord said to Durvasa Muni, he said that, "I am not independent, I'm completely under the control of my devotee." He said, "What to speak of my devotees? Even those who are devotees of my devotees are very dear to me." So the Lord actually told Durvasa Muni that, "I'm not independent, I can't act independently from my devotee." And then he went on to explain and said that the devotee is in my heart and I am in the heart of my devotee. The devotee doesn't know anyone but me and I don't know anyone but him. And in the commentaries to these verses, there is a commentary by one of our acharyas, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, who elaborates on this exchange between the Lord and Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni, in actuality, he says to Lord Vishnu, he says, certainly, if somebody comes and seeks protection from you, because you are the ultimate, you are the supreme, we can't go to anyone beyond you. If we come to you and seek protection, then certainly you must give protection to such a person. I'm coming and seeking your protection. And the Lord explains to Durvasa Muni, he said, but yes, but you don't understand, I'm not independent. I can't act independently for my devotee. And you've offended my devotee who's always dependent upon me. You may be coming to me now to help you in your difficult situation. But yes, that's all well and good. But my devotee is constantly, 24 hours a day, absorbed in thoughts of me and doing everything for me. Therefore, my responsibility, my love, my attraction is to protect him, and therefore I can't act independent from him. And then Durvasa Muni says to the to the Lord, but certainly if you see a person suffering, you must feel for them. Don't you have a heart? I'm suffering. Where's your heart? Can't you think of my suffering? And then the Lord says to Durvasa Muni, he says, but you don't understand. My devotee, who's always absorbed in thoughts of me, who's always serving me, who's always happy simply to please me, who's always meditating on me, using all of his senses to satisfy me, he is very dear to me, and therefore I want to do something for him, because that the Lord by nature wants to reciprocate with somebody. I want to give him something. He says, but when I approach my devotee, I ask them, Maharaj Ambarish, what can I give you? And the devotee always says to me, I don't want anything. I just want to serve you. I don't need anything. So then the Lord says, so I insist, please, take something. What can I offer you? And the devotee says, please offer me the opportunity to remember you and to serve you. And I'm satisfied. Whatever I try to give him, he has no particular interest in it. But still, I want to give something to my devotee. Although I can't offer him wealth, I can't offer him a kingdom, I can't, none of these things. He just wants to serve me. So the devotee, he explains what the devotee does. He says, the devotee, he takes me into the core of his heart, and he serves me within his core of his heart, always by remembering me. Therefore, because I can't give him anything else, I want to give him something of value that he would appreciate, I give him the most valuable treasure I have in my storehouse. I give him my heart. You're asking me to have a heart. And I'm telling you, I don't have it. If you want my heart, you have to go to the person who possesses it. You go to him. So he didn't say, I refuse. He didn't say, nobody can help you. Sorry, Sudarshan Chakra, it will kill you. No, he didn't say that. He said, no, you will want my heart. Don't come to me for my heart. And if you want my mind, if you want me to think of your suffering, I'm always thinking of him. I don't have a mind. I don't have a heart. But if you go to him, he has both. So that's what Krishna does for those who actually serve him with love. He gives him his heart. Because the devotee won't refuse Krishna's heart. The devotee will accept, and it's the most valuable. If you have Krishna's heart, you have Krishna. So, although the devotee doesn't want anything from Krishna except the opportunity to remember him, Krishna is very eager to give something for those who are always absorbed in thoughts and remembering him. He gives himself. So, that is Krishna. And As we said before, in loving relationships with Krishna, when the devotee offers Krishna a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, Krishna doesn't really need the leaf, the flower, the fruit, or the water. But he says, if you offer it with love, I'm very eager to accept it because of the love. So a loving relationships on the transcendental platform, on the spiritual platform, they're of this nature. Loving relationships are based upon the symptom of love is Anya Balasita Sunyam Gyanita Manya Avatam. As Rupa Goswami says, love is devoid of the desire for fruits of gain. It's devoid of the desire for mental fruits of liberation, for the desire for liberation, or it's devoid of the desire for relief from suffering, which of course Durvasa Muni wanted. He was approaching Vishnu to relieve my suffering, whereas Maharaj Ambarish was always absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Lord. And that is a symptom of love. There's no expectation of return except the opportunity to serve. So Prabhupada tells the story of how love purchases the Lord. I like to tell this story. It's a very simple example. How love controls the Lord. He tells the story of a prime minister. His name was Prime Minister Gladstone. And he says that once there was this important prime minister, his name was Prime Minister Gladstone, who had a visit from an ambassador. The ambassador came to his office at a previously scheduled time to meet with the prime minister, and he approached the secretary. And he said to the secretary, "My name is so-and-so." I don't know what the ambassador's name was. "I'm here to see the prime minister. Could you please tell him I'm here?" So the secretary said, "Please sit down. I'll tell him that you're here." She went into the office, and 2 minutes later, she came out of the office and said, "The prime minister is busy right now, but he'll be with you shortly. Please sit down. Remain seated." So the ambassador was sitting there, waiting. 5 minutes passed, 10 minutes passed. He thought he was pretty important too. He was becoming a little impatient. And he noticed that when the secretary left the prime minister's office, he noticed that the door was a little bit open. So he saw the secretary was busy, so he decided, "What's so important that he's keeping me waiting for so long?" So he decided to peek in and looked in the door, and he saw that the prime minister was on the floor on his hands and knees, and his grandson was on his back riding him like a horse. And whenever his grandson would kick him, the prime minister would immediately jump up and move quickly. In this way, he was enjoying with his grandson and was controlled by his grandson. So this is what was so important to him. And Prabhupada used this example and says, this is just like Krishna. Krishna is absorbed. Well, he has nothing to do. He says, "Namam karmani bhutani name kama palais biham iti mam yobi janati kama birnasa bhajate." He says, there's no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the work, fruits of my work. And anyone who knows this in truth about me, he'll also not become entangled. He has nothing he has to do. And although he has nothing he has to do, still, he does a lot. But what does he do? Now, I oftentimes ask the question to my audience that if you had nothing you had to do, we have a lot of things we have to do. I'm sure a lot of you have to go to work, you have to get up early in the morning, there's a lot of bodily demands you have to take care of, we have to eat, we have other people we are obliged to, and if we don't fulfill our obligations to them, we especially if we don't pay the rent and we say, sorry, I'm not going to pay the rent, and you may not be able to stay there for so long. Many things you have to do. If you don't do, there'll be consequences. In most cases, serious consequences. But Krishna says, there's nothing I have to do. That's Krishna. He doesn't have to do anything. So, he said, nor do I aspire for the fruits. So, because Krishna has nothing that he has to do, then he simply enjoys. He's the supreme enjoy. He's Parama Purusha. So, if we had nothing we would had to do, what would we do? How? We would do what we wanted to do. Right? Don't some of you have a list? Keep a list? Huh? You know, we all keep a little list. You know, oh, when big vacation comes, I really want to go to this place, or on the weekend, I'd like to get a little time, I got to do a little shopping, and I'll go to this place, but I can't do it now because I get home from work too late, and I have to cook dinner for my husband. So many things I have to do. So you write down your little list of things that you want to do when it's the time to do it. But now, take all those things away. What would you do? You'd probably go to your list and do all the things you wanted to do, and then you think, wow, I can really make a pretty big list here. Because I don't have to do anything. And there'll be no consequences. No consequences. Nice, isn't it? Be nice. Krishna's like that. But Krishna says, anyone who knows that I'm like that, he can enjoy the same. He can have it. He can also experience the same. Just by knowing that. He says, janma kama cha me devyam evan yogiti tatvata. Anyone who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance in this world and my janma and my karma, my activities, he doesn't have to take birth again. Attains my eternal abode. Just simply by knowing. Why does he come? Why does he come? Does he come to collect servants? He doesn't need servants. He doesn't come to collect servants. He doesn't come to collect the offerings from his devotees because he needs them. He comes to reciprocate love with his devotees. Paratunaya sananam vinashayacha duskritam dharma sankstapranatya sambhavam yuge yuge. Krishna says that in order to deliver my devotees and to annihilate the miscreants and reestablish religious principles, I come in. But Prabhupada says Krishna doesn't have to come to annihilate miscreants. He can do that very easily without having to come. He can do anything. Everything happens simply by his will. Natasya kayam charanam chavijyate. It says for Krishna there's nothing for him to do because everything is done through his different energies. So he could annihilate the miscreants without having to come. But why does he come? He comes because he wants to reciprocate with the devotees, to satisfy them. So in this way we understand that just as Krishna is very busy, he's active, he's actively engaged in reciprocating loving relationships with his devotees. Those who love him, who have unmotivated love for him, and have pretty deep affection for him, and who serve him, then Krishna reciprocates by serving them. Just as Prime Minister Gladstone had his grandson on his back, and his grandson was kicking him, although certainly he's not a horse, but he was becoming just like a horse to satisfy his grandson. And that was much more important for him than to meet the ambassador. Ambassador, let him wait. Let him wait. My grandson is with me. Therefore, he's bound by that love. So in the same way, Krishna is enjoying with his devotees. He's bound by the love of his devotees. Therefore, he says, I'm always thinking of my devotees. Devotees are always in my heart. I am always in the heart of my devotees. The devotees don't think of anyone but me, and I don't think of anyone but them. This is Krishna. And Krishna, because he is aham bija pratapita, he is the seed-giving father of all living beings, he has a relationship with everyone. And not only that, but Krishna can, because he's situated within everyone's hearts, savasya chaham hini sadavishto matak smita jnanam apohanam cha, I'm situated within everyone's heart, and from me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Because he's there within everyone's heart, he knows exactly what is situated within the heart of the devotee. What is the devotee thinking? He knows that if the devotee wants to please him, that he's very eager to accept that love, and therefore Krishna reciprocates by giving himself. He gives himself. He gives his heart. So that is the nature of loving relationships between the Lord and the devotees. We introduce that just to help us understand that what are the characteristics or symptoms of love. Excuse me. What's the schedule?
We can speak to the 8:30. And after it, I want to ask you if you have some power.
Excuse me?
To make some more kirtan.
Kirtan. Yes.
After 8:30, is it possible?
It's possible. I was actually going to speak about Tadati Pratigrinati Guyama Kyati Pichjati, which is a verse from the Upadeshamrita by Rupa Goswami, Rupa Goswami talks about loving relationships between devotees. Not only should there be loving relationships between the devotee and the Lord, but actually our previous acharyas have given us an indication of that, how devotees can have loving exchanges in a similar way. Everybody is looking for loving exchanges. Relationships are something which is very important. And of course, our philosophy is based on the simple principle that first we have to understand who we are in relationship to Krishna, and when we understand who we are in relationship to Krishna, then, as Prabhupada says, simply by seeing the sun rise in the morning, we may not be able to see anything in the darkness, but when the one sun rises in the morning, we can see everything by the presence of the sun. So in the same way, when we understand who is Krishna and our relationship with him, then we can also understand our relationship with others, with other living beings, and how to be properly friendly towards all living beings, which we introduced as the point, the question that was asked last night. How to be friendly towards all living beings. And of course, as we explained, to be friendly towards all living beings is a very advanced position. And that verse was specifically speaking about those who are on a very elevated platform of devotional service, of bhakti. And we cannot imitate that platform. But still we can be friendly by understanding what is it we can do best, by understanding what we can do best to serve them. And therefore we explained that the devotee, the second class devotee, he makes distinctions. The second class devotee, he has love for the Supreme Lord. He has friendly relationships with devotees. For those who are misled, but are not envious of Krishna, but are misled and are innocent, the devotee tries to serve them by enlightening them and helping them to understand who is Krishna and what is their relationship with them. Just as the verse in the Ishupanishad states that one who sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord is a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? Or as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Vijivanaya Sampane Brahmane Gava Hastini Sunichaiva Svapakicha Pandita Samadarshana, that the humble sage by virtue of true wisdom sees the the gentle and learned Brahmin, the elephant, the cow, the dog, and the dog eater. He sees them all with equal vision. He's Samadarshana. He sees them equally. Why does he see them equally? Because he sees Supersoul. The soul and the Supersoul in the heart of all living beings. So for those who are innocent and have been misled, he tries to help them by telling them who is their best friend, who is Krishna. And for those who are outright atheistic, who are very bent on decrying the existence of the Supreme, and who are not interested in hearing anything about the Supreme, then the recommendation which is given in the scripture is upeksha. A devotee, he neglects them. Although he neglects them, he's still merciful to them. The reason why he neglects them, he knows that because if he tries to convince them and they don't want to be convinced, they'll only end up criticizing and blaspheming Krishna and they'll become even more degraded. Therefore, for their benefit, he neglects them. But within his heart, he prays to Krishna, please help them, enlighten them. So in this way, there is distinctions or differentiations. But the point is that the verse explains that one should learn how to have friendly relationships with devotees. And Rupa Goswami says, the dati patagrinati guyam agyati pichtati. That's the verse. Bhunkte bojayate chaiva sadvidam priti lakshanam. He says, offering gifts and charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad, and offering prasad are the six symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another. Purport. In this verse, Srila Rupa Goswami explains how to perform devotional activities in the association of other devotees. There are six kinds of activities: giving charity to the devotees, accepting from the devotees whatever they may offer in return, opening one's mind to the devotees, inquiring from them about the confidential service of the Lord, honoring prasad, or spiritual food given by the devotees, and feeding devotees with prasad. An experienced devotee explains, and an inexperienced devotee learns from him. This is guyam akyati prichchati. When a devotee distributes prasad, remnants of food offered to the Supreme Lord, in order to maintain our spirit of devotional service, we must accept this prasad as the Lord's grace received through the pure devotees. We should also invite pure devotees to our home, offer them prasad, and be prepared to please them in all respects. This is called Bhunkte Bojayate Chaiva. There's a lot more. It's a long purport. But essentially the point that I wish to make about loving relationships with devotees is generally we think that when we hear this verse, that we think that a loving relationship is that we give something and then we get something back. And this is said by offering prasad, accepting prasad. But actually, we see so many different examples in the scripture. Just like there's the story of Prahlad Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Nrisimhadev wanted to give a benediction to Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad Maharaj said to Lord Nrisimhadev, why are you offering me a benediction? Don't you know I was born in a demoniac family? Why are you trying to entice me in this way? I'm not serving you because I want something from you. I'm not a merchant. I didn't come to engage in a mercantile relationship with you. That I'll do something for you. I'll do something for you if you do something for me. Please don't tempt me in this way by offering me a benediction. He says, better if you want to give me a benediction, that you be my master and let me be your servant. Then I'll be happy. That's how Prahlad Maharaj said. So Prahlad Maharaj also was of the same mindset. He didn't want to engage in the mercantile. In fact, he uses that word. I'm not interested in a mercantile relationship with you. I'm not doing something for you so you'll do something for me. I'm doing something for you because I want you to please me. I want you to be pleased. Excuse me. I want you to be pleased. And a devotee, that's what a devotee is aspires for, is Krishna's pleasure. It was Prahlad Maharaj who was speaking to his 5-year-old friends, and he was telling, when he was preaching to them, he says, "All my friends, O sons of demons," they were all sons of demons, he addressed them as sons of demons. He wanted to make sure they knew who they were. "All my friends, O sons of demons." Of course, they all became devotees by its association. Said, "You cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead even if you become an expert Brahmin or become advanced in learning." He says, "Not by austerities, nor by chastity, nor by great sacrifices, nor by accepting vows. None of these things can awaken Krishna's pleasure. Krishna is pleased only when one has unalloyed devotion to him. And without sincere devotional service, everything is simply a show." This is Prahlad Maharaj telling his friends. Why does he call it a show? The reason why he calls it a show is because Krishna only looks with his love. That's what catches his attention. When there's love, you have Krishna's attention. But if there's no love, you can't get Krishna's attention. So Krishna, and therefore Prahlad Maharaj is saying, even if you're an expert Brahmin, even if you perform great sacrifices and austerities, Krishna says, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you perform, do it for me. You want Krishna's attention, do it to please Krishna. Krishna is attracted by the love, not by the austerities. Not by, even by, you know, you can't bribe him. You can't offer him millions of dollars and say, "Okay, Krishna, look, I'm giving you millions of dollars. Now you really have to pay attention to me." It can't be bribed. These things don't attract him. In fact, we oftentimes give the example that just as a wealthy man, sometimes it's very difficult to know who his friends are. Right? Everybody's thinking, why is he being friendly towards me? You know? Does he want something from me? So he's always very, very, very selective. He wants to make sure that, is this person really interested in a relationship with me? Or is he interested in a relationship with my money? Right? So Krishna's Bhagavan. He's all opulences. He's the most wealthy, he's the most intelligent, he's the most beautiful, he's the most powerful, the most renowned. So what is it that attracts Krishna? He knows. Who does he give himself to? Who does he accept as his confidential friends? Those who love him. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj is saying, without sincere devotional service, everything is a show. The reason why he says it's a show, because you're not going to get Krishna's attention unless there's devotion. His attention is only where there's devotion. And therefore, if you're trying to get his attention and there's no devotion, it's for somebody else. It's not for him, because he's not looking. And Prabhupada emphasizes this point also oftentimes, that if we want to get Krishna's attention, then we have to serve those who have Krishna's attention. That's our way. If we want to get Krishna's, Prabhupada says, "Love me, love my dog." He would use that saying. "Love me, love my dog." So in the same way, if we may wave the money, but Krishna's not looking. They're not looking. It's because it's not the money, it's the love. This is for you. I want to please you. I'm not expecting anything in return. This is a loving relationship. Same thing when serving devotees. When serving devotees, we serve devotees out of love. We don't serve devotees because, "Oh, I'm doing this for you, and therefore you should be doing this for me. Don't forget, we have an agreement." The real real loving relationship comes when it's out of love. Then the devotee thinks, I don't need this. I'm satisfied in serving Krishna. I can be happy just serving Krishna. But this devotee is offering this to me out of love. What makes the relationship complete is when the devotee says, I'll accept because it's offered out of love. This is loving relationship. Loving relationship means I offer and the devotee accepts. Not because he's greedy for it, but because it's been offered with love. And the devotee who's offering is thinking, I'm doing this because I want to please you. I want to serve you. I want to assist you in serving whoever the devotee is serving. Let me assist you and serve you. And I don't want anything in return. Just please give me an opportunity to serve you. And the devotee is thinking, oh, yes, I'll accept. And of course, just as Krishna wants to give something in return, the devotee sometimes thinks that he wants to give something in return. But still, the devotee who gave something doesn't expect it. He doesn't make it a condition. That's not love. That's a mercantile relationship. It's not love. He doesn't expect it. And when he serves without expecting anything in return, then he gets to experience what is loving relationships. They start blossoming. Actually, they start really, it really affects the heart. The heart actually is so much, it melts by having loving relationships with devotees. We have to learn this. It's not easy. It takes time because we're conditioned souls. We can't immediately come to the elevated platform, as we said, and imitate highly elevated devotees. But at least we should know the standard. At least that much we should know. We should know what the standard is so that we can aspire for it. And we should look for those who actually do know the standard. And by serving those who do know the standard, what happens? We actually can begin to experience a little bit. Because those who do know the standard, when they know that all this devotee is serving out of love, let me help him. As Prabhupada says, the inexperienced devotee inquires and the experienced devotee speaks. What does he do? He tries to help them to become Krishna conscious. He tries to help them to become advanced. He tries to help them in their devotion. He tries to help them experience the same thing that he experiences in Krishna consciousness. This is love. Therefore, Prabhupada says, the experienced devotee speaks, the inexperienced devotee, he hears from him. This is loving exchange. And not only that, but confidential. As we were saying last night, sometimes it's very hard to have confidential relationships in the current climate, social climate. And that sometimes we reveal our mind in confidence to somebody, and then all of a sudden, as we said last night, we find it on Facebook the next day. It's very difficult to be, because people don't know how to control. They don't know how to control the urge to speak. Somebody tells them something in confidence, and then all of a sudden they think, oh, I have something juicy to tell somebody. Nobody wants to reveal their mind in confidence because everybody's looking for some juicy things to talk about. Gossip, gramya kata. Right? They don't know how to control the urge to speak. And then Bhakti Loka, there's so many instructions by Bhakti Vinod Thakur where he talks about the importance of controlling the urge. He says, one who cannot control the urge to speak, he'll make very many enemies. Many enemies. Because generally when we get together, we talk about others. Because it's a natural propensity to talk about others. But the natural propensity is to talk about Krishna. That's the natural propensity. But because we're still conditioned and because our tendency is sometimes we're not so attracted to speaking always about Krishna, and because it's natural to talk about others, we start talking about others. And then if we don't learn how to control the tongue, we start saying things for our own reputation, to hurt their reputation, and because you have some juice, and you think that maybe I can use this to hurt their reputation and then I can become recognized as a better person than they are. Just mind this. As we said last night, yas, what's this first? Yastu Vishvasya Kala Prasidatam. This verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says, Kala. He says, almost everyone in this world is envious. It's there. So, anyways, but loving relationships means confidential relationships. We reveal our mind in confidence and we inquire confidentially with those with whom we want to have a confidential relationship. These are loving exchanges between devotees. And as we said, just as Krishna sets the standard, yad yad acharati shreshtasta tadivetarojana, that whatever actions are performed by great men, the common men follow in his footsteps, and whatever standards he sets by his exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So Krishna sets the standard of loving relationships. Of course, we're not Krishna, but he teaches us how to have loving relationships, also even amongst devotees. How does he do that? He comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, but he comes and shows us by accepting the mood of a devotee and by reciprocating loving relationships with his devotees. And in this way, we learn from the pages of Chaitanya Charitamrita and the association of the Lord and his devotees how to have proper loving relationships between devotees. It's a catalyst. It's something to start with. And as we said before, we should at least know what to aspire for. And we should try to practice it ourselves and see by hearing in the association of devotees, chanting Krishna's name in the association of devotees, and accepting prasad, distributing prasad, giving gifts, accepting gifts. These are loving exchanges between one devotee and another. So you wanted to have kirtan by starting at 8:30. It's 8:21, so I should leave a little time. Anybody has some questions, and then we can have kirtan. Is that okay? Okay. Does anyone have any questions or comments they would like to make? Yagatov.
So, is it necessarily have to be done to create one relationship between devotees, like step toward creating love to Krishna? This step has to be done?
Does it have to be done?
Yes.
In other words, we have to learn how to love devotees before we can love Krishna? Is that your question?
Yes. Have to be, or we can...
There's a nice analogy in this connection. I'll tell it to you. If you're off in a distance, and there's a high mountain, Mount Everest, for instance, very high mountain, okay? And because it's the highest mountain in the area, when you're far away, generally you can see it from a distance. But when you get closer, you see there are many subordinate mountains there because you're close. And you see, yes, there's this mountain there, there's another mountain there, there's another mountain behind it, in front of it, there are lower mountains in front of it, and they're all there with the highest mountain. But when you're far away, all you see is Mount Everest. But when you come closer, you see, yes, all these other subordinate mountains. So in the same way, if all you can see is Krishna, and you can't see Krishna's devotees, it means you're very far away. So, if you want to get close with Krishna, you better get close with his devotees. Because Krishna is always surrounded by his devotees. So this is the best way to get close with Krishna, is learning how to become close with Krishna's devotees. So yes, we should have loving relationships with devotees. But before we can have loving relationships with everybody, like Prabhupada used to say, a servant of everyone means a servant of no one. Right? You try to serve everyone and please everyone. Right. But if you want to learn how to serve others, then first you serve those devotees who help you to understand what is love. You serve them, you learn from them, you hear from them, and you receive instructions from them. And once your heart is touched by service to them and from hearing from them, then you'll be able to see others in a different way. But if less the heart is touched through such service, it's very difficult to have loving relationships, even with others. It's not so easy. It's not so easy. We try to serve and please everybody, but if we don't know the platform, it's first there has to be Krishna. How to put Krishna at the center. That we have to learn from the more advanced devotees. And when we learn gradually, then we can begin to develop proper relationships with others. But we have to learn first. And the best way to learn is just like Rupa Goswami. He gives in the Upadeshamrita we just read from. He gives, what is it? Verse 6. No, excuse me, it must be 5. Yes, verse 5. He says, one should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Krishna, Lord Krishna, in his mind. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshipping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Rupa Goswami makes distinctions. Doesn't say it's all one. We serve, faithfully serve, and hear from those whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity of criticizing. Those who are non-envious. And by serving them, then we become non-envious. We quoted that verse last night. Prahlad Maharaj says, may there be good fortune throughout the whole universe. May all envious persons become pacified. And he said that may all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga, for by engaging in devotional service, they will be able to think of each other's welfare. This is Prahlad Maharaj's prayer. He says, therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence and always be absorbed in meditation on Him. Non-envious. Envious persons, they have to become pacified by devotional service. So therefore, Rupa Goswami says that we hear from and faithfully serve those persons who are devoid of the propensity from criticizing others and who are fixed and engaged, and by serving them and hearing from them, then gradually we can begin to. You sure?
Could you kindly explain?
It's only 1 minute left.
You just hear it.
Asterojno.
Maharaj, could you kindly explain more, maybe in detail, more simple, how practically the person who has family life, living in city, and life is very busy, practically serve to more advanced devotee in a way like you described before. Practically. What does it mean, devotional service to?
By following their instructions?
instructions.
Yes. That's very practical. Following their instructions, meditating on their instructions, and being very careful to not, and as Lord Chaitanya says, to not be sunichna to rodi vasi hishtana mani namana deina kirtana yasadai hari. One of their most important instructions is to chant Hare Krishna constantly. But Lord Chaitanya says, if you want to chant Hare Krishna constantly, you have to be very careful to feel oneself lower than the straw on the street, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respect to others and never expect any respect from oneself. In that state of mind, one can serve the instructions by chanting Hare Krishna constantly. Prabhupada even said most important instruction from the spiritual master is chanting Hare Krishna. But we have to learn how to chant with the proper consciousness, and therefore Lord Chaitanya says, Janada Pisu Nichina Torodha Pisu Hishna Mani Namadina Kirtaniya Sadahari, said one should thread this verse on the string of the holy name of the Lord and wear it around one's neck for constant remembrance. Последний вопрос. Well, maybe somebody else has a question. Give others a chance, maybe. Anybody else have a question? No? Okay. But this is the last question.
I have a question. What is the difference between criticize and
discriminate.
He is also can see like can be like constructive.
He can be what?
Constructive critic.
Constructive criticism. Yes.
What is the difference between one and another? Because some.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that if one points out something, a fault in others, it's constructive if one's heart is freed from hate, envy, and malice. He should look within his own heart first to make sure that none of these qualities are there. And if they are there, then better to be quiet. Yes. So therefore we always have to look within our own heart first. And there's a very elaborate description by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I can read it in an end. It's elaborate, but it's not that long. But it's really to the point. Okay. And it's so much to the point that I'm afraid of just reading it and not commenting on it. But excuse me. What's going on? Okay, here it is. We should display anger towards those who are envious of devotees. This is a particular limb of devotional service. A lack of anger against blasphemers is unjustified, but we need to understand who is actually envious of devotees. Those who don't serve the Supreme Lord, the Supersoul, most blissful friend of all living entities, do not benefit themselves, but instead invite trouble by their envy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Such people are branded as envious, and we should not show them mercy. Show mercy means we should, if they're envious, we should become angry towards them, especially when they're harming other devotees. These people become intoxicated by worshipping materialists. We should both ignore them and display our anger toward them. But before that, we have to see whether we ourselves are envious of devotees, whether we ourselves are actually serving Krishna. Or are we serving something else on the pretext of serving Krishna? How much are we attached to Krishna? Are we trying to enjoy the object spent for Krishna's enjoyment? I think my enjoyment-prone material body is fiercely envious of Krishna and his devotees. Because instead of thinking constantly of Krishna's lotus feet and happiness, I am busy worrying about my own happiness, blaspheming others, and looking for faults. I do not look at myself at all. I am such an offender at the feet of devotees that I should first learn to display anger toward myself. I'm so envious of devotees that I should beat myself with shoes simply to purify myself. Then I can set an example for others and sincerely engage in the service of Hari Guru and the Vaishnavas. I must remember that everyone is worshipping Hari but me. I am unable to do so. I should also remember that I may die at any moment. So first we should show anger toward our own sinful propensities, such as our desire for profit, adoration, and distinction, and our propensity to cheat others. We must correct ourselves first, otherwise we cannot correct others. Then we have to correct those who are related to us, who are envious of the spiritual master and Krishna, and who are pulling us toward material enjoyment by tempting us. This is the secret of success. We have to be careful. Therefore I said, at least we should look within our own heart and make sure, am I actually thinking that I want to do this for the benefit of this person? Or am I actually thinking there's something else? There's something else there that I should be very careful. Of course, the other person may project his own consciousness on you and may say, oh, you're just envious of me. It goes both ways. They don't want it. It's called Atmavan Manyate Jagat. Atmavan Manyate Jagat means that if I wear blue glasses, tinted glasses, I see the whole world is blue. Which means that I'm envious, but if I'm envious, I think everybody else is envious. Because I'm envious. And it's much easier than to see envy in myself. It's much easier to see in others, because then I don't have to look at it in myself. This is called Atmavan Manyate Jagat. So at least we should look within our own hearts. Before we speak, we should make sure, do a little inventory, make sure the right motive is there. Sometimes we have to correct, it's our duty. Especially senior devotees, sometimes it's duty to correct. But then you also have to understand that other person's capacity to hear. And the best chance you'll have for correcting them is make sure you step aside and false ego, put it aside and try to think of the best interests of the person. Okay. Sure.
Oh. So.
Yeah.
Fall in.
but
okay.
Come to the garage. It's wrong. It's wrong. Please come.